From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Guy Raz. There's an informal presidential rule in this town. When your domestic agenda isn't going anywhere, focus abroad. And that's just what President Obama is doing this week in Asia. Foreign policy is an area in which he may have the best chance to make his mark over the next 2 years. That's our cover story today. In a moment, we'll talk to the top Senate Republican on the Foreign Relations Committee, Richard Lugar, and later, former Majority Leader Tom Daschle, on why the president needs to have Republicans over for coffee more often. But first, a little perspective from the archives. To another president who lost the midterms.
This Congress produced tax
cuts. No, just a little further back.
Presidential standby authority.
Not him.
And the national security of this country are involved.
There we go. President Harry Truman. It's 1946.
You know, this is the era of FDR. The United States had been victorious in World War II.
But in November of that year, Republicans took control of the House and Senate. Princeton historian Julian Zelizer explains what happened next.
Democrats are absolutely shocked, and everyone reads it as a kind of mandate for conservatism. The New Republic says, bow your head, folks. Conservatism has hit America.
And Truman, Zelizer says, realizes he wasn't going to convince the Congress to back his domestic agenda.
And I think that's part of why he turns his attention abroad, where there was still a possibility that he could build a legacy for his presidency.
We must take immediate and resolute action.
He surprised people a bit because he works with Republicans like Senator Vandenberg from Michigan to push through some of the key policies of the Cold War era.
And so between that midterm loss of 1946 and the next election in 1948, Truman managed to launch the Marshall Plan to rebuild post-war Europe, signed the National Security Act,
which creates the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Council. It's a vast expansion of the federal government.
And he also decided to ask Congress for $400 million to help prevent Greece and Turkey from falling under the sphere of Soviet communism.
And he's not sure what to do. And Vandenberg famously says that he has to scare the hell out of everyone to get this through. And that's exactly what Truman does.
Collapse of free institutions and loss of independence would be disastrous, not only for them, but for the world.
He goes and he makes this dramatic speech about the threat that communism poses here in the United States, and he ultimately wins a lot of Republican support for this program.
That's Princeton historian Julian Zelizer talking about the program that came to be known as the Truman Doctrine, quite possibly Harry Truman's greatest political legacy. Now, if President Obama is looking for his Arthur Vandenberg, he may find him in Indiana Senator Richard Lugar, the ranking Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The first thing the president wants the lame duck Senate to do next week is ratify the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty. It reduces the size of the U.S. and Russian nuclear arsenals. Now, some Republicans want to wait to consider the treaty after the new senators arrive. But Richard Lugar told me, don't delay.
I think it's very important to act promptly. It's important that we get the verification situation straightened out immediately. And secondly, that we get back to the table again to talk about tactical nuclear weapons. Those talks will not occur until we ratify the relatively modest New START treaty. And I say relatively modest because it makes only small adjustments in the numbers of nuclear warheads and carriers and what have you. But it does get the process back on track. It's not on track now, and that is dangerous for our national security.
There are some newly elected members of the Senate, like Rand Paul from Kentucky, who have expressed some concern over, you know, whether the treaty could limit American anti-missile deployments overseas. Do you think those concerns are legitimate?
No, I don't believe that they are. And we've had 15 hearings of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and all the testimony has been very clearly that we are not inhibited in any way in creating missile defense, whether it be based in Europe or based in the United States or based anywhere. I think that's a very important consideration, and I'm hopeful we'll have an opportunity to visit with Senator Paul and with others as they're coming in.
Senator Lugar, in which areas do you see daylight between congressional Republicans and the administration when it comes to foreign policy?
Well, for the moment, I would say that there is a very considerable degree of cooperation in Afghanistan. Republicans have given very strong support on Afghanistan. I would not suggest that Democrats have not given support to, but the fact is that this has been much more of a debate within the Democratic Party. That President Obama has always perceived was a severe limitation on his ability to conduct foreign policy in Afghanistan.
You have been described as one of the few remaining statesmen in the U.S. Senate. I'm wondering if you're concerned at all about the difference in basic foreign policy perspectives between some of the so-called Tea Party candidates and more traditional Republicans like yourself.
On foreign policy issues, it seems to me that many of the Tea Party candidates have views that I would think are very similar to my own. The campaign we've just been through, as a matter of fact, did not have much to say about foreign policy.
Well, I mean, some candidates have talked about how the president has gone around the world apologizing for America and so on and so forth. I mean, would you agree with that?
Well, I really wouldn't characterize the president as apologizing for America, although I understand that some feel that he might be accused of doing this sort of thing. But at the same time, I think as members from the Tea Party come to the Congress, they will face the same worldwide problems the rest of us have. There are, I think, no doctrinaire lines right now with regard to how to solve extremely complex problems that really have defied solutions for quite a while.
The next 2 years, will it be gridlock?
No, I don't perceive gridlock, certainly in foreign policy. I believe that the American people will require and maybe demand that we make headway on our domestic economic affairs, but likewise, they will have an eye out for dangers of this country and the world. They will demand that we take that responsibility, which we should.
That's Indiana Senator Richard Lugar. He's the ranking Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Lugar, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Now, if there's one person who knows how to work in and out of power, it's former Democratic Senator Tom Daschle. He was both a majority leader and a minority leader, and when I called him up this past week, he explained that even in the most partisan of environments, there are always ways to find compromise.
You know, Mitch McConnell has already said that his number one priority is defeating the president. I think that's a strange number one priority for a national political leader. But if that's it, I'd like to know what his fourth and fifth priorities are, because maybe his fourth and fifth and President Obama's third and fourth actually might overlap.
Let's talk about the domestic agenda. Where do you see the president and congressional Republicans working together?
I think that trade, I think the economy, I think tax policy, there's an array of things that surprise most people about health care that we could agree to, including more information technology, finding better ways to ensure we keep people healthy. Those are kinds of things that I think are worthy of far more discussion than they've gotten to date. All we've talked about so far is repeal, and that's going nowhere.
But it seems as if there's no question that both President Obama and the congressional Republicans will have to compromise on their principles.
See, I don't think it's compromising on principle. I don't think either side is capable of or even should have to do that. But I do think when it comes to public policy, you can apply principles in a way that allow for common ground.
Do you think the president should adopt, you know, the so-called triangulation strategy that Bill Clinton used, you know, where he effectively played elements of his own party off of congressional Republicans?
Well, I've never been comfortable with that term because I think it's so pejorative. The fundamental question can be, can we include? Inclusion is key. If people feel included, if they feel as if they can be invested in something that they really can point to as an accomplishment, I think there's some real opportunities.
So how would, you know, President Obama do that, do what Clinton did? I mean, what issues, specific issues, do you think he ought to choose?
Well, first is the process. I would love to see some Camp David sessions. I'd love to see some weekly meetings down at the White House, intense meetings on probably the first and most important thing is the economy. How can we continue to improve? How can we build? How can we bring down the unemployment levels? And what can Republicans, Democrats do together to make that happen?
It's widely known that you urged the president to hold more private meetings with top Republicans, particularly with Mitch McConnell. That apparently didn't happen until the president was in office for 18 months. I mean, will President Obama have to, you know, sort of schmooze more and slap backs more with congressional Republicans in order to get things done?
Well, I don't know that schmoozing necessarily is what he needs to do, but I do think you have to build relationships. You know, their legislative work is built in part on trust, and trust is built on better communication, and better communication is built on better chemistry. And the only way you achieve better chemistry is when you've got people in the room that begin the dialogue, and that's really what has to happen. We've got to see more dialogue.
Tom Daschle, you know what it's like, particularly behind the scenes. I was surprised to learn recently that at the height of the Lewinsky hearings, Bill Clinton used to have Trent Lott over all the time for private meetings, for coffee. What does the public not know about what happens behind closed doors? I mean, does the president have a pretty civil relationship with some of these top Republicans that we just don't see?
Well, I don't think we see as much as I wish you could, because I think a lot does go on. And, you know, the president got a lot of criticism for not having one-on-ones with the leadership. But I'm telling you, I know for a fact that he's had a lot of occasions where he's had real opportunities to meet with the leadership and in small groups to have discussions, serious discussions about issues that, this country needs to address. So that needs to go on. But I don't think there's enough of it. I think we have to do a better job at relationship building than what we've done so far.
That's former Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle. Senator, thank you so much.
My pleasure.